Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Are you the one?
Are you the one?
You're the one.
And as you try to figure out who the one is for you, in the primaries coming up, check out our new podcast, Digesting Politics, from now through Super Duper Tuesday, when New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut all vote. WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein and I are sitting down over lunch once a week and talking about the campaign. Digesting Politics is a web-only feature that you won't hear on the radio. Sign up for the Digesting Politics podcast for free at WNYC.org. Well, the big story in the presidential race over the weekend was the growing tension between the Clinton and Obama campaigns over how each is using race. This seems to have grown gradually out of remarks the Clinton campaign made about Obama's youthful cocaine use, then Martin Luther King's role versus President Johnson's role in passing civil rights legislation, and a few other things. New York State Attorney General Andrew Cuomo, a Clinton supporter, even referred to campaign shuck and jive. Was that just an unfortunate choice of words? But how much of this was started by Clinton's people on purpose? How much has been an orchestrated overreaction by the Obama campaign? And what should the standards of decency be when it comes to using race or gender on the campaign trail? You can call us about any of this if you've been following this dust up or want to talk in general about when it's legitimate or illegitimate in your opinion, when there are historic races and historic possible firsts in these campaigns. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post a comment to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And with me now are Ben Smith, who wrote about this over the weekend for Politico.com, and Errol Lewis, who has a column about it in today's Daily News. Hi, Errol. Hi, Ben.
Good morning.
Morning, Brian.
And let's look at a few of these specific comments first and each camp's reactions to them, and then we'll talk about the bigger picture of right and wrong. Here's what Clinton said about Martin Luther King and LBJ.
Dr. King's dream began to be realized when President Lyndon Johnson passed the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Why did she say that, Ben Smith? Why did she even make that comparison in the first place?
You know, it was a strange moment. I was standing right next to her when she said it. She was doing an interview with Fox News in a gym in Dover, New Hampshire, and the reporter had asked her about she had accused Obama of raising false hopes, and the reporter had said, well, you know, would it have been false hopes to, would you have said that to Martin Luther King, basically? And she came back with this kind of notion, you know, this very strange attempt to associate herself with Lyndon Johnson over King, essentially. She later sort of tried to repair it and say, well, you know, that she wasn't trying to compare Obama to King or to put King down, just to point out that there's also sort of a practical, you know, executive part of the civil rights movement. But, I mean, it's a hard comment to explain, honestly, and they didn't really try to explain it.
And there was a slightly bigger context to her remarks, which I know Greg Sargent on Talking Points Memo wants everybody to be aware of, mentioning that she said President Kennedy was also involved before LBJ and President Eisenhower wasn't involved before that. But the message was still that it takes a president and not just a civil rights leader to make real change for equality. Errol, is that racial baiting, in your opinion, or how does it help her and hurt Obama?
I don't know if I'd call it racial baiting. I would just call it, number one, a misreading of history, and number two, a misreading of history that will be very unpopular with black voters, especially those who have any kind of link to the civil rights movement. I mean, let's recall that this is not ancient history. There are people who actually were there, and I don't think, I've met and talked and interviewed and worked with enough civil rights alumni, if you want to call them that, to know that they would take a very dim view of their work and their sacrifice being seen as a prelude to Lyndon Johnson doing a bill signing in Washington.
It was sort of a preposterous thing to say. And the thing is, before it got caught in this you know, bitter argument between Clinton and Obama, her aides were immediately saying that's not really what she meant to say at her next stop. And what she meant to say at her next stop, she kind of tried to repair it by saying, by praising King for all the work he'd done, for all the sort of substantive work he'd done, for all the personal risks he'd taken, and saying, that's not Obama.
But I'm also curious, since we're unpacking this as far down as we can, how the original question, and was it a reporter who asked the original question, Ben?
Yeah, it was Major Garrett from Fox News. He read her a quote from Barack, from Obama, actually, in which Obama had said, false hopes. She's talking about false hopes. You know, would she have said that to Martin Luther King as he stood on the mall giving
right.
this great... So that was the context. And then, so it was really... I mean, I don't buy the notion that it was misspoken. It wasn't misinterpreted.
But the question also likens Obama to a civil rights advocate as opposed to somebody who's running for president of the United States. And so I even wonder about the premise of the question. It's interesting that it came from somebody from Fox News. But, Errol, I don't know. Does the question in its own way, I mean, I guess the comparison with King is that Obama is getting praised for using this language of unity like King uses and like JFK uses. Those are the two common comparisons. But what do you think the question really meant?
Well, I mean, the question, I think, and it was a good question, it led her to where she wanted to go, which was to say, look, this guy is talking about hopes and aspirations that are electoral political system cannot normally contain and does not normally handle. Well, you know, what do you make of that? And that, in fact, is the heart of the issue, or at least it was at that time. That's what has been causing the Clinton campaign so many problems. That's why he's closing in the polls. That's why he's getting these big crowds. That's why he's kind of lit the nation on fire in a certain way. And so he led her where she wanted to go. And what she wanted to say, I think, and it's kind of reasonable to say, look, you want to be Martin Luther King? Go out and be Martin Luther King. But, you know, he campaigned for Lyndon Johnson, so why don't you go out there and campaign for me? I think that's really what she
I think Errol's just about right. But also, you know, and on a secondary level, and wait a second, Martin Luther King had this incredible string of accomplishments. And Martin Luther King didn't just give speeches.
Right.
He led a movement, I think the point that kind of got elided and that she later tried to make was that Obama is no Martin Luther King, which, you know, may be an inflammatory thing in its own right, but it was a different point.
Well, now we get to the question of Obama's response and whether he's orchestrating an overly racialized reaction to it for his own political gain. And here is Clinton speaking yesterday on Meet the Press, accusing Obama of overinterpreting those remarks. And she goes on to say more about race and gender.
Clearly, we know from media reports that the Obama campaign is deliberately distorting this. And, you know, I think we should just take a step out here for a minute. This is the most exciting election we've had in such a long time because you have an African-American, an extraordinary man, a person of tremendous talents and abilities running to become our president. You have a woman running to break the highest and hardest glass ceiling. I don't think either of us want to inject race or gender in this campaign. We are running as individuals. We are making our cases to the American people.
And so, Errol Lewis, in your opinion, is the Obama campaign deliberately distorting this, as she accuses?
I would think if they were going to try and distort it, they would have distorted some of it in my eyesight or somewhere in my vicinity. And I just haven't seen any evidence of it at all. In fact, I think quite the opposite. You know, I listed some of the other things. I mean, you talked about one of the more high-minded attacks, but there really has been a string of attacks from the Clinton campaign on Obama's promise and on his hope and on his basic program, and much of it is racially tinged, some of it crudely so. And you know, they really have not responded. You know, they're in a bit of a bind. I don't think that it's a novice error because he's got people around him like David Axelrod, who comes out of the Chicago political machine, where they certainly know about how to counter a low blow and maybe even throw a few of their own, but mm-hmm. they just really haven't responded in kind. If you think about, I mean, who's a prominent Obama surrogate, a formal surrogate, you know, an elected official or someone tied to the campaign who has stepped forward and hit back? And that person is not known to me.
Well, you know, I think they've been trying to figure it out, but it's not quite that straightforward. And I think I wrote sort of the first piece on this last week, and in that piece, a spokeswoman said something which they have not repeated since, which was that, you know, that voters are alarmed by these statements. Folks are beginning to wonder, is it an isolated situation or is there something bigger behind this? And that's what his spokesman Candace Tolliver said.
So that's trying to raise questions in the public mind
about Clinton's remarks
without quite accusing her.
Stepped off that, as far as I can tell. Like, huh. I think they decided that was not the line they wanted to take. There was also a memo circulating, still unclear who is exactly responsible for it and where it was circulated. Because when I asked for their research on this, they just sent me a bunch of Obama quotes on racial reconciliation. But the campaign, there's a memo that seems to have been in some part of Obama's campaign circulated, kind of rounding up potentially offensive Clinton remarks. So I think they initially, at least off the bat, weren't quite sure how to handle it, and now do seem to be. I think they kind of have, they're doing a little of both. Obama isn't about to let Clinton off the hook for these remarks, as he's been asked to.
Another example is President Bill Clinton's use of the term fairy tale. He got accused of using it to denigrate Obama's larger message of hope and unity. And I have to say that we casually refer to it in that way on Friday's show. But listening to the longer quote now, I wonder if that was fair to Bill Clinton. He insists it was only about the difference between him and Senator Clinton, that is, between Obama and Senator Clinton, on their Iraq voting records. So here is a relatively full version of those remarks.
It is wrong that Senator Obama got to go through 15 debates trumpeting his superior judgment and how he had been against the war in every year, enumerating the years, and never got asked one time, not once. Well, how could you say that when you said in 2004 you didn't know how you would have voted on the resolution? You said in 2004 there was no difference between you and George Bush on the war, and you took that speech you're now running on off your website in 2004, and there's no difference in your voting record and Hillary's ever since. Give me a break. This whole thing is the biggest fairy tale I've ever seen. I've heard, so you can talk about Mark Penn all you want. What did you think about the Obama thing calling Hillary the senator from Punjab?
Errol Lewis, with all that context, what did Bill Clinton do there?
Well, I think that, part of the context, I hadn't listened to it in a while, the full speech, but, just the scorn and the tone of voice, I think that's what the plan of attack is. And the particulars aren't even important. I mean, if you parse the thing, which the president, frankly, is inviting us to do there, if you parse the thing, what he's saying is, well, his judgment was just as bad as Hillary's, that he hasn't been terribly consistent. Now, that says absolutely nothing about his wife, the candidate. That doesn't boost her in any way, shape, or form. It's simply it's an attack line.
But is it completely illegitimate? If he's saying, look, Obama had a speech in 2004, which was on his website, in which he said, that this or that about Iraq. Now it's not there. And once he actually got to the Senate in 2005, he started voting on every Iraq-related measure the exact same way that Hillary Clinton is. So he's trying to diminish the perceived difference between them, as it exists out there in some of the public's mind, as Obama is this big anti-war activist and Hillary is this big hawk.
No, I see it as I think it's a pretty cynical sort of a ploy, to tell you the truth. I mean, because what the Clinton administration, what Clinton would have us believe is that her actions have to be seen in the context. Each vote, each speech, each decision she made has to be seen in what she knew in the context of what she knew at the time, and that her position has evolved over time. Even if you take that standard, which is not a great standard, but okay, fine, let's use it. Even by that standard, he started out far more opposed to the war. He has far less of a record of supporting it in any way, shape, or form. I mean, that 2004 vote, I mean, this is 4 years ago? Mm. I mean, a statement. And, I mean, what he put on his website in 2003 and 2004, I mean, I thought we were supposed to be talking not about words but about deeds.
It's Ben pretty, Smith, any different thin. Any different view on that, Ben?
No, I basically agree with Errol. It's pretty thin. And, in fact, the statement they keep going back to is him saying he would not have voted for the famous $87 billion.
Right.
But it isn't really clear that he was saying that he would never vote for funding for the war.
That's the same John Kerry voted for it before I was against
it. I mean, on the broader point, though, I mean, he casts himself as a figure of great, I mean, like every politician, maybe. You know, he speaks with kind of great clarity. In fact, his instinct, Obama's instinct, is often for a compromise.
Right. But the Obama campaign allegedly took that notion of the campaign being a fairy tale. When Clinton was referring to something very specific there, I think that context shows, and the Obama campaign then made it sound like he was denigrating this whole pitch of unity and, bipartisanship and hope and calling all of that a fairy tale. Ben, have you seen them try to do that from the Obama side?
You know, Obama supporters and Obama surrogates have done it. I mean, and certainly a lot of his supporters come from kind of, the sort of older generation of black politics where they're were maybe, you know, they're quicker to see that stuff or at least more comfortable talking about it than Obama is. But I don't know. I don't think the campaign has been pushing it terribly hard, at least not to me.
Let's take a couple of calls. David in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Hi, how's it going, Brian?
All right. What you got?
Well, I was up in New Hampshire campaigning for Obama. I have been a longtime Clinton supporter of both the Clintons. I voted for Hillary. I even worked for her in 2000. It was a tough choice for me. I really feel like Obama is the better man this time. But this whole latest string of developments. I mean, in New Hampshire, I was knocking on doors. People were telling me they were getting these mailers that Obama was not really pro-choice or was not strongly pro-choice. The levels that the Clintons are going to in this campaign to besmirch Obama, I think it has the serious possibility of creating a great rift in the Democratic Party. I mean, personally, I'm to the point now where I don't even know if I could vote for Hillary Clinton if she wins the nomination. It just seems so ugly and so divisive and so cynical, as your guests were saying. It really, really bothers me.
So this one really, really gets to you. Thank you very much. Emily in Nyack, you're on WNYC. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Brian. I think the Clintons got really scared in New Hampshire, and we saw this really mean, aggressive side of them. But in the larger picture, I think it's really good that America is finally talking about race and gender, because we don't like to do that. We try to pretend like we're all equal, and that doesn't matter anymore. So I'm glad we're talking about race and
but
gender.
But is this the conversation to have about race and gender?
Well,
as opposed
you know, I don't
to...
know that we ever do it the right way, but I'm really hoping that a conversation about race and gender will lead to an honest conversation about the role of class in our society and in our politics. These are both very wealthy people. People who aren't wealthy don't get to be congresspeople, senators, you know, candidates for president. And, you know, there's a real divide between Obama voters and Clinton voters based on class. And that's the kind of thing that the media really isn't talking about.
Emily, thank you. George in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, George.
Good morning. Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. My apologies. I really differ quite strongly with much of the conversation that's happened, as well as with your callers. In looking at all of this, as far as I can see, as one who lived through the civil rights struggles and the rest, I'm now in my late 50s, there was a great deal that went on. Of course, and the fact that black community brought to the attention of the nation and twinged our consciences and forced us to confront the issue of race in our society was vital. But it wasn't without strong Democratic majorities and Johnson's pushing it through that what the Kennedys, you know, talked about actually got done as legislation, which is where the changes were. They were accommodations acts, Civil Rights Act, things in education. There was a lot of things that went on. That was legislative. And what bothers me about a lot of this discussion is I don't really care about the meanness of this one or the meanness of that one or the rightness or wrongness of this one. In a sense, it's a wonderful thing that the number of black people in South Carolina is so large who can vote that this has even become an issue. In that sense, it's great. But in a much larger sense, what are we really talking about that matters the most to us as a country? We need to find someone who is able to have legislators come along with them, and most politicians are transactionally oriented, not transformationally oriented, and we need people who can help get legislation through that will change things people want to have happen. Giving nice speeches isn't enough. It's a matter of finding a team and finding ways of doing things. And that requires a degree of pragmatism that may run against the idealism of a lot of the people who have spoken about how wonderful this person is or that person is.
And George, thank you for your call. So Errol, is this, at the end of the day, as George suggests, a tempest in a teapot, when we should really be looking at how effective a president each of these candidates is going to be? You know, does it really say anything about what kind of president they would be for the people of the United States, whether they get a little mean or down or dirty during the campaign?
I think it does. The wounds that are inflicted, especially in a primary season, can last and can poison an administration. There's nothing like a hard-fought primary battle to divide people. I mean, if you think back to, and it was 1988, you know, so now it's this is the 20th anniversary of the Willie Horton ad. And it arguably helped set penal policy. It certainly divided the country. It certainly muddied the waters. It was unfair. But, you know, the original attack, although it's often ascribed to Bush Sr. and his campaign, the original attack came out of a Democratic primary. So there are some there's lasting damage that can come out of this. I think the caller is right to say that ultimately who we're trying to elect is somebody who's going to organize the federal government, and their ability to do so is in fact one of the more important things that voters should consider. But along the way, you know, when you see someone saying, "Oh, don't hope too much. Oh, don't you know, everybody here is just a cynical politician trading and transacting and triangulating." That doesn't do much, I think, to sort of move the country forward.
I think there's a flip side to that too, though, which is that one of the things that Obama offers, and you can see this as sort of craven or as, you know, as sort of, you know, his great appeal, is moving past this quickness to take offense on identity politics. And he sort of pulled at one of the debates kind of very, you know, spontaneous, you know, of his own accord, kind of chose to, you know, kind of forgive Joe Biden various of his inappropriate words.
And here's about the only clip we could find of Obama, and we, you know, you hear from the clips we've been playing how voluminous the Clinton's words have been. Here's about all we could find from Obama.
The slaves and abolitionists fought against that evil system with their prayers and their hope. That's what allowed them to resist. And that's how a president was able to chart a new path.
Which seemed to be a reference back to Martin Luther King, and that allowed the president to chart a new path. 20 seconds, Errol Lewis. Your newspaper today, The Daily News, has a new poll of New Yorkers which finds about an even split among African Americans after they had been previously supporting Hillary Clinton pretty overwhelmingly. We talked about how meaningless polls are in the previous segment. Does this mean anything? 10 seconds.
I think it does, actually. It just in terms of momentum, it's more than a 20-point swing, and that is statistically significant even in the worst poll.
And even with all of this, African Americans about equally divided in New York between Clinton and Obama. Ben Smith from Politico.com, Errol Lewis from The Daily News. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.